Stu Does America.
Welcome to the program. Predictable with Stu Bergier is coming. Head to predictableshow.com right now. You get sign up for free. Get a 2026 Senate preview that we've just released, and keep an eye on this YouTube page as well if you happen to be there. YouTube.com/Stu Does America. Seeing episodes of the show there, along with so much more. Drew Holden is going to join us today to talk about the media's ridiculous pursuit of the climate change agenda. Hillary Clinton has accused Donald Trump of a massive cover-up. And in related news, irony is dead. But we're going to start, though, by doing the unfathomable marketability of Mike Tyson. And this, sometimes we do stories because they're in the news. Sometimes I don't even really, like, it's not my favorite or most interesting topic to me, per se, but, like, I know it's a big topic to everybody, so we try to talk about it. Sometimes there's something quirky, some stupid chart I bring up to you. This is just an observation of mine, and it just fascinates me how this has happened in our society. I don't understand it. It's like there's no other examples of it. Let me walk you through what I'm thinking here. RFK Jr. says FDA will act on petition to re-examine some ingredients in ultra-processed foods. The citizen petition, which was filed last year by former FDA Commissioner Dr. David Kessler, says processed refined carbohydrates, including corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, and refined flours are linked to health issues such as high blood pressure, high triglycerides, and excess abdominal fat. Petition argues that the status of these ingredients, generally recognized as safe, based on outdated data, and the agency has the authority to re-examine the safety of certain refined sweeteners and flours. Now, look, the case for, if you will, high fructose corn syrup, which no one will ever make outside of this program, but the case for it, the best thing, like what the food companies would say, is it's just the same as sugar. Right. Like it has the same chemical makeup as sugar. It's basically the same. It costs us less. That's why we use it. You may believe that. You may not believe that. But the point is, all the things that they just described as negative health benefits also apply to sugar. So, yeah, you'll get more abdominal fat from high fructose corn syrup and sugar. But OK, you want to go through that. Whatever. I mean, not really going to change my approach. But, people will. We'll do what they do. And a lot of people care about it, including Mike Tyson. Super Bowl message from Maha and Mike Tyson. Processed food kills. You got this website they put up. Real food wins, with Mike Tyson's very intimidating eyes looking at you. And he did this Super Bowl ad. The acting is almost too good. You should know this didn't actually happen. This isn't just real footage of someone trying to eat a donut. This is actually acting. And I know it's going to be hard to detect, but check it out.
What do you think he's doing? Processed food kills. Remember that.
All right. Wow. There you go. Eat real food. Processed food kills. Now, Tyson is the face of this new campaign. Again, I'm a tad perplexed as to how this is possible. He went on with RFK Jr. on Fox News, and here's what he talked about.
I had an affinity with the commercial because I had a sister that died from obesity. So when they heard my story, they used me as for the commercial. And it was just to me telling the truth. People shouldn't be surprised because I'm one of the most healthiest people on the planet.
Oh.
So they should think that I would be want to be a participant in this. And I'm affected, of course, not only by my sister, but by my daughter and by some of my friends. You know, they just can't stop picking up the food. It's because the ultra-processed food is a narcotic more than it is anything, a nutritionist.
Okay, so you got that. Now, of course, Mike Tyson known for his health, I think. Now, again, is Mike Tyson in good shape? Yeah, I mean, even today, I think in pretty good shape. I watched, what was it, Jake Paul or one of the Paul people hit their boxing match. Now, he did lose, but of course he lost. I can't even get out of my, it takes me 45 minutes when the show ends to get out of this chair. Just so you know, that's the, and I'm, you know, I just turned 50. Mike Tyson's considerably older than me. The fact that he could even last in a ring for 5 minutes with a guy in his, 20s or 30s, pretty freaking impressive to me. He's in great shape. I don't know that I would consider him healthy. This is him, by the way, last year walking around Las Vegas, smoking pot out in public. Oh, again, we now think pot seems to be fine too. So I don't know really what we're doing these days. But that's not what I'm talking about here today. What I don't understand is that Mike Tyson has done all sorts of things in his life, many of them highly questionable. He was biting people's ears off, if you remember correctly. But what I'm going to focus on a little bit more is the fact that Mike Tyson is a convicted rapist. Mike Tyson is a convicted rapist, not a guy who got Me Too'd because people were like, hey, I think he did something wrong once. He made a bad joke. No, Mike Tyson went through a trial, was convicted of rape, and then went to prison for rape. As I mentioned on Twitter, which kind of got this whole thing started, Tyson really is a one of one when it comes to convicted rapists speaking out against baked goods. There's really no other examples of this happening in our entire society, maybe worldwide. Because typically what happens with convicted rapists is they serve their time. Maybe they can come back into society. Maybe they can turn their life around. Maybe they can make something of themselves. We don't typically use them later on to advertise products. They're not typically government spokespeople for food movements. They're not typically, hey, I remember that guy from that funny movie. That doesn't happen after the rape conviction, typically. We know that processed food kills, but does it rape? That, we don't have an answer. We don't know the answer to that one. Now, of course, we had him and RFK Jr. Out there, which again, like a government official out there with a convicted rapist talking about food quality. I'm just saying it's notable. And it is a bizarre thing to be like, hey, you know what, guys, we really need some good publicity. Let's do a bunch of interviews with a noted and well-known womanizer and Mike Tyson. Both of them. The womanizer, and then in addition to the womanizer, also Mike Tyson, who, by the way, did I mention, was convicted of rape. This happened, by the way, 34 years ago this week. Mike Tyson, star boxer, convicted of rape. In 1991, Tyson met Desiree Washington, remember that name, at a rehearsal for the Miss Black America pageant in Indianapolis. Washington accompanied Tyson back to his hotel room, where in the early hours of July 19th, Tyson raped her. Tyson claimed the sex was consensual. The world-famous fighter was indicted by a grand jury in September of that year, convicted in February 1992. In March, he began serving his term at Indiana Youth Center near Plainfield, Indiana. He was released after serving 3 years in March 1995. Now, I'll be honest with you. I freaking loved Mike Tyson back in the day. Before the rape accusations, I was a really big fan of him. And even after, like, watching his boxing matches, you kind of were like, well, you know, it is a fight where everyone's trying to kill each other, so maybe a guy who's convicted of a serious crime makes some sense in a comeback situation here, I guess. I don't know. But is there anyone else that has had this arc? Anyone at all? I think a big part of this was The Hangover. Now, he was in The Hangover movies, if you remember. He had his tiger stolen from him, and he was kind of portrayed as kind of a lovable, eccentric, crazy person in the movie, but a movie that everyone really loved, and it's an all-time kind of comedy classic. But that was 2009, many years after. And yes, it's true. After you serve your time, typically our society says, look, you can come back into society, and we're going to keep our eyes sort of on you to make sure you're not doing anything bad again. But generally speaking, that goes on. It's just not typically that, like, you're advertising lots of products and brought back into mainstream movies and now being endorsed essentially by the government as the voice of to teach your kids how to eat. So has there ever been an example ever of this? I was trying to come up with one. Let me run through a few. I think they all have holes, but if you're on youtube.com/judasamerica, drop some in the comments. Maybe there's some that I'm forgetting. So before we get into that, he was in a few movies, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, classic. He was in Rocky Balboa, the 2006 version, which was, I guess, Rocky VI. The Hangover 1 and 2, How I Met Your Mother, Entourage, A Madea Family Funeral, one of my favorite, actually my favorite movie by Madea at a funeral. That's true. The other one's not huge fans of. And then Mike Tyson Mysteries. It's a cartoon. It ran for 6 seasons. It's a cartoon about a guy who was convicted of rape. Cartoon. Any other rapists get cartoons? Why? Why has this happened? I'm fascinated by it. By the way, according to IMDb, Mike Tyson has had 67 on-screen appearances on movies and television since 1992, which was, by the way, the year he was convicted of rape. And coming soon, this year, he's appearing in Soul Business. So you can get there and check that out. So who are the similar arcs? I'm trying to come up with them. I don't have any. Woody Allen popped into mind. Now, Woody Allen had some interesting activities with the woman who is now married to and previously was kind of his daughter. Very, very weird. Had lots of criticism over that, but was never convicted of a crime. Even with that, his career, I would say, suffered, but he didn't go away. But it's not a perfect example. Roman Polanski. Okay, Roman Polanski was accused and convicted, right? I can't remember now, but he ran from the country because of he didn't want to go to prison over his statutory rape conviction. Again, a different type of crime, right? This was Tyson was, you know, arguably at least that he was accused of forcible rape. Again, he denies a lot of this. I understand. But Polanski obviously kind of had, he was still kind of lauded by some Hollywood weirdos, but had to move to another country. Wasn't even allowed in the nation, right? Kind of toss aside. P. Diddy? Again, P. Diddy, like, can you picture P. Diddy coming back and being like a spokesperson for the government in a few years? Like, that just seems completely implausible to me. Now, one I kind of came up with that maybe has a similar arc is Michael Vick. And I would say Michael Vick, now Michael Vick did not, it's important to understand, Michael Vick did not rape a person, okay? Michael Vick, though, people really loved their dogs, and he was in a dog fighting ring, and people really hated that. Understandably so, I did as well, not a fan. But he was brought back in, and for a while there was sort of this like, you know, I'm not sure if we should really embrace the guy. And he sort of made it back into the mainstream, but again, he didn't rape a woman and get convicted for it. Kanye West. Kanye West done a lot of things. Said a lot of things. Said a lot of really bad things. Selling t-shirts with swastikas, not something you normally come back from. But what I will say is he didn't rape a woman. Could you see Kanye West coming back and being like a spokesperson for the government? Is Kanye West getting a cartoon series that runs for 6 seasons made out of his life? Strikes me as strange. How about Kevin Spacey? Kevin Spacey, I want to be clear here. Kevin Spacey was accused of not rape, I don't think, but it was some sort of like sexual assault, sexual harassment of a gentleman in a bar somewhere, I think in Massachusetts. To be clear, he went on trial for this. And some other accusations of sexual improprieties. And he was acquitted for it. Does Kevin Spacey get to come back? Does he get to be a spokesperson for the government on food choices? It doesn't seem like it. Doesn't seem like he's in that. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was convicted of crimes, but then came back and is beloved. But they were drug crimes, totally in a different area. Now, let me ask you this one. Jared from Subway. Now, Jared from Subway did a lot of really bad things. In addition to eating too much, probably processed foods over a very long period of time. But then he went to Subway and he had there, by the way, the bread on a sandwich like that, processed. But he started eating processed foods. In this form of Subway and lost a bunch of weight, became the spokesperson for Subway. We all know where this story's going, right? Then he's caught with child porn. That's really bad. He got 15 years in prison. By the way, 5 times the sentence that Mike Tyson received for raping someone. Now, his crime, Jared from Subway, really bad. I don't remember the details fully. Was he, do you remember, was he accused of actually like participating in these acts, or was he looking at pictures of these acts? By the way, both serious crimes. I don't remember. I don't think he was, but I may not be remembering that correctly. At the end of the day, though, I can't picture Jared from Subway coming back and being like, by the way, I'm out of prison. Don't eat processed foods. It would be a strange campaign. I feel like it would be notable. We'd all say, what the hell is going on if that were to occur? But we don't say that with Mike Tyson. Why? Why don't? It's unfathomable. Why does this man that was actually convicted of rape just accept it into our, like, commercials? Why does this happen? Now, I have three theories on this. Theory number one, people think he's actually innocent. There is some, I mean, he made an argument at the time. Of course, he lost in the case, and then he lost on appeal. But he made an argument at the time that it was consensual. There were some witnesses that weren't allowed in. He made those arguments. Again, those arguments didn't work with the appeal. But there are some people who just believe he's innocent. I think that is true with some people. Okay? I think that is true with some people. However, I think it's the minority, because I don't think many people really remember the trial or really remember the details of the trial. So I don't think that's most people, but I think some people just think, look, I think he got railroaded there and it was not true. Okay, that's one. Second group, it's kind of the, like, left-wing thing that we always used to make fun of, which is like, oh, but he had a bad childhood. You have to give him an excuse. He did have a bad childhood. He had a really rough life. He went through a lot of crap. He got punched in the face a lot of times at a young age by a really strong people. And, you know, you watch him now, and even when you're watching the video, he seems oddly harmless, even though he's the most harmful person probably you've ever known in your entire life. The man is best known for beating the crap out of huge adults and then secondarily known for raping a woman. The point is, he's been violent his entire life, but there's something about him, the way he talks, what he's been through maybe in his life, that almost makes you feel like, oh gosh, like he's kind of the victim here. And like maybe people are giving him an excuse for whatever happened back then because they feel like he went through a lot as well. The third thing, which might actually just be the truth, is no one wants to say anything about this because they're afraid he's going to beat the crap out of you. They're terrified of Mike Tyson, rightfully so, for multiple reasons. One, was the heavyweight champion of the world. Two, he actually was convicted of rape. I just want to know what's happening here. Why? Just tell me what happened to make this a thing. Why was he in a lovable Zach Galifianakis comedy? What? You wouldn't choose an ex-murderer to be in it. How did he do this? How did he do this, and how does he advise politicians on the same stuff? They're getting in trouble all the time for this crap, and then they're just gone forever. Somehow he's just be able to just navigate it, and I am fascinated as to how this has occurred. That is my thesis for the day. By the way, I will also point you a little bit. You know I have to do this. If we're going to be doing commercials about processed foods, and this might make Mike Tyson want to beat me up even more than pointing out everything I pointed out on this episode, but processed food can kill. If you eat enough of it, it will do the same thing as other foods if you eat too much of them. This is a thing. We did a story on this, by the way, Let me go to this. We're running kind of late here. There's a show I did a while ago called Stu Does Processed Foods. Aired in late 2024, right around Thanksgiving, because I make healthy choices on this program. If you want to go back and watch that, we go into this detail of the study in much, much more depth. But I wanted to bring a little bit to this to your attention. If you happen to be like me, be a person who, first of all, is likely going into hiding from Mike Tyson, but secondly, really enjoys maybe some fast food, maybe some highly processed foods. Okay? Study. This is one of the big studies that went into looking at all of the thousands and billions and trillions of studies that say that processed foods are really, really bad for you. It was called Association of Ultra-Processed Food Consumption with All-Cause and Cause-Specific Mortality, population-based cohort study. You want to talk about some sexy reading? Go into that. But it is true that they had a study, and there are many studies that say that processed foods are bad for you. Basically, what it shows is that people who eat lots of processed foods over their lives have significant health effects and live a shorter period of time. That's kind of our normal understanding for it. This study looked at those studies, though, and tried to break down what it was showing in the study. And one of the most key pieces of all of these studies, one of the central things you need to understand when understanding when people are talking about how evil processed foods are, is this specific fact. All of the above studies included alcohol in ultra-processed foods. Now, there is no doubt, right, that alcohol is a processed food. It starts out as potatoes. It starts out as wheat and hops or whatever, and it turned into a delicious, sometimes delicious, but sometimes not so delicious, but a beverage that you drink and you get buzzed, right? We also know the health effects of alcohol, especially when being consumed to excess, are very negative for people. And I tell you that as a person who did multiple power hours on this show throughout its run. So I get it. But when you're adding that in, it is a massive factor as to whether processed food. If you're saying someone who you're comparing a group of people who drink to compare to a group of people who don't, it's a massive difference, as you would know. Now, when you look at the details of this study, you find this. The study found that a higher intake of ultra-processed foods was still associated with slightly higher all-cause mortality. Well, what does that mean exactly? They broke this up into five different groups. The highest group, group five, let's call it, had the highest consumption, the stew group, the highest consumption of ultra-processed foods. The other people were like, you know, people who were like just eating, I don't know, organic tomatoes all the time, way down at the bottom. And then there's three groups in between them. They broke them up like 20% of each group. So the all-cause mortality among participants in the lowest and highest quarter, it was four groups actually, was 1,472 and 1,536 per 100,000 person years respectively. Now, that just rolls off the tongue. You probably automatically understand what that means. But per 100,000 person years, the difference was 1,472 and 1,536. Another way to state that difference is 23 days. It means like at the end of your life, it's 3 weeks longer or 3 weeks shorter. That's the difference between the highest group of ultra-processed food and the lowest group. By the way, I will note the groups in the middle. You got to look at the groups in the middle, right? So those people just had a normal amount. They ate a normal amount of processed foods. Well, how did they do? They lived 12 days longer than the group that ate no processed foods. So the healthiest thing to do, apparently, is to eat some processed foods, but not the highest amount. By the way, you might say, well, Stu, what are you saying? You're telling me highly processed foods don't cause heart disease and cancer? And no, of course, I'm not saying that. Well, I am saying that. But you know who else is saying that? The study, quote, "We found no associations for deaths due to cardiovascular diseases, cancer, or respiratory diseases." It's all in the study. Again, like those 3 weeks at the end of your life are probably awesome for you. For me, I feel like it's going to be a lot of laying down. But whatever it is possible, but according to that study, that you might lose the last 3 weeks. Price that into your life. When you're looking at a taco, look at it and say, gosh, I don't know if I eat these constantly. 3 weeks in my end of my life, just me be chopped off. And you got to make that decision. And I wouldn't make that decision based on just any taco. I'd make that decision based on delicious tacos, but not just any taco. Okay, let's talk about something else. Anything else, right? We've been talking a lot about anything other than rape and processed foods. We've been talking a lot about the climate this week and last week as well, because I'm like obsessed with making sure people understand what a big deal this endangerment finding repeal is. It's a very positive thing. We've been watching the coverage on it quite a bit, and Drew Holden has been doing that as well. He's going to join me next. You ever notice how sleep is the first thing that goes when life gets busy and you stay up a little bit later? This is happening to me, I'll be honest with you right now, because I've got this show going on. We've just wrapped up the radio thing. That was a big deal. Then we've got the new show launching, predictableshow.com. All these things going on, and you wind up staying up a little bit later. And the next day, you're kind of running on fumes for a while. And then you get up, and you're like, yeah, energy drink, coffee, what am I going to do? The better thing to do is to make sure you get your sleep, the sleep that you actually need. And that's why Dream by Beam is one of the greatest things to do, because it's just one simple drink, a delicious drink you have before bed, and it helps you actually wind down instead of just lying there thinking about everything that you didn't get done that day. Dream is made with a blend of ingredients like magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, melatonin, all designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling rested, not groggy. It tastes wonderful as well. It's like a hot chocolate. There's like a cinnamon hot chocolate. It's delicious. It's more like a nighttime treat than a supplement. So if you've been waiting to try this for the first time, try Dream. This is a good time to do it. Shopbeam.com/stew is the place to go. Use the code STEW. Get an exclusive offer up to 40% off Beam's Dream Powder with the discount code STEW. You can get their best-selling Dream Powder for just $39. It's like, a dollar a day, $1.25 a day for a great night of sleep. It's certainly worth it. Shopbeam.com/stew. Shopbeam.com/stew. Happy to welcome Drew Holden back to the program. He's the managing editor of Commonplace and author of the Holden Court newsletter, which you can find at drewholden.substack.com. Be sure to check it out. Drew, welcome to the program.
Stu, thanks so much for having me back, sir.
I appreciate it. I mean, I hope you're okay there, because what I've understood is the waters are rising. At any point, we could have like 25 feet of water just over every coastal city. I hope you're okay after this endangerment finding repeal.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Stu. I'm terribly alarmed. The world is ending as I understand it. The only thing we could possibly do to prevent massive climate change from destroying the life we've all come to know, it's out the window. So any day now, it could really just come on all unglued.
Yeah, I think the only real solution left is voting for Democrats. I think that might solve it.
Sure.
If you do that, we might be able to do it. It really has been interesting to watch all of this play out in the media, Drew, because... like, you know, we're talking about a very nerdy thing that most people didn't even know existed. But it is the fundamental foundation of every restriction on climate that's based through climate change that we have to deal with. Everything from the stop start on our cars to fuel efficiency standards, many of those, all these different things are affected here. And it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I think, Stu, I think you put it really well there. All the things that most kind of consumers and American voters and American people, when they think of regulations to combat climate change, it really does all flow from this law that President Trump just recently overturned. And it's interesting because the way the media has framed it isn't the regulatory apparatus is being revisited. Perhaps rather than have the regulatory apparatus dictate the way that we can produce cars, everything about the car that you drive, there's going to be other measures that need to be taken to do this. Rather than frame it that way, the response from the media has been the fight against climate change is over. We've been defeated. Trump has just thrown the gates off, and now we're just going to get railroaded, destroyed under the weight of climate change.
Mm. I mean, and of course, as a person who thinks that fight against climate change has been terrible for our economy and a totally misled, you know, misleading, stupid venture from the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that framing because I think that's great. And I do think we really have made progress here. I think it's a real, real positive. But the apocalyptic nature of the reporting on it is amazing. I mean, ABC News did a report where I think it was David Muir who was, I thought he was going to start crying in the middle of
yeah.
this.
Yeah, I mean, CNN had a panel the other day where it was similar. Like, you were just expecting everyone on this stage to burst into tears. I think my favorite, a New York Times headline from when the ruling came out said, Trump administration erases the government's power to fight climate change. And I saw that headline and I thought, my goodness, that's very dramatic. I'm sure they'll clarify it in the subhead. But no, in the subhead, it says the Environmental Protection Agency rejected the bedrock scientific finding that greenhouse gases threaten human life and well-being. And I thought to myself, Stu, you make a really good point. The way that we have combated climate change for a long time, since 2009, when Barack Obama entered this rule, was only through bureaucracy. It was only through a whole bunch of nameless, faceless, shapeless bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., determining how we're going to fight this thing. All Trump did, as someone who's pretty sympathetic to this stuff, right? I mean, Stu, I was an environmental studies major in college. I hate to admit this out there, you know, here on television, but it's true. I was probably two ticks to the right of Bill Clinton, which to my class meant I was like three ticks to the right of Genghis Khan when it came to to politics at the time. This is right around where all these things, you know, this measure was put into place. And I remember thinking, wow, it's really dramatic that the government has seized all authority to address climate change. This thing, you know, everyone's talking about this thing. Everyone's talking about this issue. It's motivating voters. Voters are, you know, they're concerned about this thing. Young people are so alarmed. They're doing these die-ins in the streets. Is the only way to address this, is the only way really to approach this by removing bureaucratic authority to say that we have to do these things? It seemed kind of preposterous. And we're seeing all of that come back around again here 17 years later when the rule gets thrown out. It's unbelievably biased. It's unbelievably dramatic. See, I think we've talked about this before. I don't think there's any issue in the whole litany of things that the media does poorly. I don't think there is any issue they cover worse than climate change for three reasons. One, they don't understand their own biases. Two, they don't understand what real Americans think about it. And three, they are deeply, deeply allergic to the idea that anyone could have an opinion other than their own. And I think we're seeing that right now with this media coverage.
Yeah, it's so revealing about the way they think about the world, right? Like they see themselves as the only heroes that can come save the day. And what of course is true here, and like let's say think of some of the advancements we have seen when it comes to fighting climate change. You know, something like an LED light bulb, right? This wasn't, yes, the government did all sorts of things to try to make people switch to them. But those at the time was fluorescent bulbs. And no one wanted those because they sucked, right?
Yeah,
LED lights are better. So people just choose them because they want them. You know, even like with Elon Musk, you know, who is a big climate change guy, he goes and one of his main reasons to create Tesla was because of climate change. One of the reasons he did SpaceX because he was worried about climate change.
Yeah.
But like, he was able to develop this not because the government was pressuring people into creating electric cars. He did it because he made good cars that people actually enjoyed. And that's how you make lasting change.
I think that's right. And, you know, it's funny. There was a study that came out from a research firm called the Rhodium Group about what would U.S. emissions actually look like with and without this rule. Right. Because I think one of the things that's lost in all of this belly aching, all this wailing and gnashing of teeth is how impactful is this stuff? Right. How impactful is this rule? And they found that even without this restriction in place, this thing that's ending the fight against climate change, according to the New York Times and CNN and everywhere else, by 2035, emissions are going to fall between 26% and 35%. Not they're going to go to zero. Not they're going to increase. They are going to fall by between a quarter and a third of what they are now. That the bedrock, you know, just to steal the term from the New York Times, the bedrock metric that actually matters, according to the left on these things, we are going to improve substantially without needing any of this regulation. And I think the refusal to attempt to reckon with this is just so preposterous. And I think it's so nakedly biased as, you know, when you look at those other facts that come into contact with it.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think this is what's revealing about this topic generally, because I think everybody, conservative, liberal, moderate, all look at the world and want it to be a place where they can thrive and have their kids thrive. And everybody wants the same things on this. But the real skepticism, I think, that comes out of the right is because of this stuff, because of the way they treat it, right? They you know, the sort of theory right, on the right, is basically like it's not about climate change, it's about control. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some real validity to that government approach here, that whether all this stuff is true or whatever it is, at the end of the day, when their control goes away, they lose their minds. And they've had this control since 2009, and they've been complaining about climate change the entire time. It certainly hasn't done much to improve the problem.
Yes, Stu, I think two big points here. One, just as when you said that, I just thought, oh, that's it. That's like, that's my whole sort of theory on media bias, right? This is why media bias is such a big problem. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of other reasons we should have a legacy press that can hold the government accountable, that can hold power to account more broadly. But one of the real big problems when you lose an entire kind of one half of the political compass to media bias is that people don't think the reason you're doing these things is for a good cause anymore. They They don't trust you on these things. And I think there's no issue where skepticism has been higher across anything in the media than climate change. It's interesting. You know, there was a Pew poll that talked about this not too long ago, where it talked about climate change and viewers' perceptions on climate change more broadly. And it was interesting, even among people who are sympathetic to climate change, right, which I think is a broad swath of Americans, 60% were concerned that they weren't being told the truth, that the media wasn't reporting it honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. That causes so many people to just recoil from it, to say, no, I don't buy that. I don't believe this. I think you're actually just trying to feed me bugs, or I think you're just trying to take away my gas stove, or I think you're just trying to take away my SUV. And in so many cases, when it comes back down to it, and we're having these fights about whether or not a single rule is going to end our fight against climate change, I think a lot of people respond to that and think, no, it's just taking away this thing that you like, this power that you have. And in this particular case, a power that has only grown. It has only metastasized in a way that has impacted so many other forms of everyday life.
Yeah, and it's I think you're totally right on that, and it comes down to these little things that they're trying to do. They're trying to disrupt your life by taking away your SUV, and then at the same time telling you that like nuclear power is not a good option here, like that can't help at all. And you're just like, I can't take you seriously if that's what you're arguing. I do want to hit one more thing on media bias, though. Sure. This is something from a little while ago, but I think it's still fascinating. This Washington Post mass firing that they had the other day.
Yeah.
There's this idea that what the Washington Post did poorly was they ran away from their roots, right? They were kind of a left-wing media organization, like so many other media organizations are. Jeff Bezos came in and tried to insert a little bit of sanity when it comes to the economy and other things and the free market. And he didn't come out and say, "Gosh, we want Kamala Harris to be president." They didn't endorse. All this made their left-wing people go away, and that's what ruined the business. Is that a correct narrative?
I think it's an oversimplified narrative, Stu. So I like, if you look at the numbers, the Post lost a huge chunk of its subscribers when they didn't endorse Harris. And I think part of this is they were originally going to endorse Harris, and then Bezos stepped in and says, "No, we're not endorsing anyone." And so you have a whole bunch of liberal readers who are thinking, "Ah, this thing I have come to know, I've come to trust and come to believe in, it's being taken away from me. It's being changed. It's being corrupted by these kind of powerful corporate forces." So I think there is something to that. But I do think one of the things that a lot of people talking about this Post layoff, before we get into it, I'm a DC resident. I'm a Post subscriber. We have the America's largest release of wastewater, uncontrolled release of wastewater in history happening right now in this town, in the place where I am sitting, right? It would be great if we had a flagship publication that could do a really good job of investigating what was going wrong there, right? We don't have that because the Metro desk for the Washington Post of it has been gutted. They had a great sports section. That has been gutted. There's all sorts of reasons why I think people should want local media. When you lose local media in a city, there are all sorts of other attendant harms that come downstream from that. But I think one of the things people forget about the Post is that if you're a legacy media outlet, this is since 1910s, 1920s. In the history of American media, the break from yellow journalism, from partisan hackery, from publishing things that just aren't true and having that be kind of our source of media that existed, back around the turn of the 19th century, the thing that these media outlets hung their hat on, including the Post, is they're going to be just the facts, right? Everything that's fit to print, all the arguments that make sense to debate, all the information that we want to understand and know, regardless of who it offends, of no tribe or party, I think is the way that The Atlantic puts it. So the Post really hung its hat on, we're going to do this thing well. We are in the nation's capital. We are going to get our information straight from the source for all of our readers in DC and beyond. And then they didn't do that. And then they were undercut with bias. And then they have all these examples, whether it's COVID, whether it's the lab leak, whether it's Trump, whether it's Russian collusion. There are all these examples where the Post, rather than do that, rather than even try to do that in a lot of cases, they ran with partisan narratives. They ran with left-wing talking points. And they did it in a way that was obvious and apparent to readers, to people. And they lost, I think, a lot of credibility. You don't have to be bulletproof. You don't have to be unbiased to make money in journalism. I do think you have to be unbiased if you're holding yourself up as an unbiased publication, as a strictly facts-based publication. If that is your remit, if that is your history, if that is your flagship, you got to hold to that. And I don't think the Post did.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine for McDonald's to serve Big Macs, right? But if you're a salad place,
a great way to put it.
It's not a great approach. Yeah. Drew Holden, managing editor of Commonplace. So be sure to check out the Holden Court newsletter as well, drewholden.substack.com. Great stuff over there. Drew, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Pleasure's mine, Stu. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hillary Clinton is accusing Donald Trump and his administration of a cover-up over its handling of Epstein documents, which is a fascinating accusation, because, you know, the Clintons would never cover anything up. That would never happen. I want you to know that. But secondly, one interesting part about that is the cover-up of them not releasing these documents actually helped Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, because you didn't know how intertwined into Epstein's world they were. So, like, shouldn't they have been rooting for the cover-up? I don't know. All I know is that they were much more involved with Jeffrey Epstein than Donald Trump was after very early on, before their breakup, long before the charges were even filed, which is fascinating. U.S. Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona tells the BBC he will seriously consider a White House run. No word as to whether voters will seriously consider him. I don't think they will. By the way, I looked at the prediction markets. By the way, predictable show. .com, a new show I'm going to be doing that it's going to be dealing with the prediction markets, and particularly I was ties to the election, looking at the 2028 Democratic nominee for president. First place, Gavin Newsom, 31%, AOC at 12%, even after that Taiwan answer. You got a bunch of people under that. John Ossoff, gosh, that's weird. Josh Shapiro, Kamala Harris is up there. Down at 4% is our man Mark Kelly. Surrounded by people like Gretchen Whitmer, Andy Beshear, Wes Moore, and John Stewart. So that's where Mark Kelly is in that conversation. And Mamdani has tapped an ex-Biden official to audit the NYPD and other agencies. Why? Are they, like, not following the law? No, they might be following the law, which is much worse, because he's worried about sanctuary law lapses. So if you have a sanctuary city, you're saying, hey, we're not going to pay attention to those federal laws. We're not going to participate them at all, not going to help at all, not going to participate in any of those immigration investigations. If you do actually follow federal law, then Mamdani's coming after you. He's going to crack down on you to make sure you're not following the law the way you're supposed to not follow the law. That's modern day New York City, boys and girls. Okay, so here's what happened. A woman in India had in front of her the life that every woman dreams of, an arranged marriage. I think that's what, it's just wonderful. So someone's chose, picked your husband, it's gonna be wonderful, everything's gonna be totally fine. And, you know, she was looking forward to that, went to bed as a hopeful bride. And then when they went in the morning, she wasn't there. What was there? A snake skin. Mm-hmm. Just a snake skin. What happened here? Snake skin right by her clothes and her jewelry. What happened? Was she eaten by a snake? No, no. People around town believed she was a Nagin, a mythical woman believed to have the power to transform into a snake. Very scary. And then investigators came and looked at it and said, actually, she just didn't want to get married. A young woman in India fakes snake transformation to escape arranged marriage. I actually had three fiancés who did the exact same thing. Three. Unbelievable. By the way, predictableshow.com is the place to go. Get subscribed to learn all about the election and these prediction markets as well. And, of course, Stu Does America right here on Blaze TV. It's StuDoesAmerica.com. Check it out.